understand what men are like. And we've drawn fairly heavily on these two books, For Men Only and For Women Only, which you can have a look at afterwards. And it's based fairly squarely on the premise that men and women are different, and that we think differently, that we act differently because we think differently, and that one of our problems in marriage is that our basic assumptions about each other are really too simplistic. And sometimes they're just out and out wrong. And so I think that the way that I think is normal, and that the way Jim thinks is abnormal. And why doesn't he think like me? And I think that it's the same for blokes. You think that you're normal and that your wife is weird, and that why doesn't she think more like me? So I think we need to move from the basic understandings of what we think women, well, what we think our partner should be like, really to trying to figure out what they are like. So I'm going to make some generalisations here, and Jim will do also. So, but be aware that not everybody fits into these categories, but they are generalisations. Most people do. So on your sheet, you can see we've got on one side, it says our surface understanding of what women are like. And the other side is actually what it means in practice. So we're trying to move from a surface understanding to a more deeper understanding of what women are like. I'm going to move through these six things fairly quickly, and then hopefully leave some time for some questions. And then we'll probably have a break then, Jim. And then Jim will come back and do the other one. So the first one is that women want to feel loved. That's our surface understanding that men have. But what it means in practice is that even if your relationship is great, your mate, your wife, likely has a fundamental insecurity about your love. And when that insecurity is triggered, she may respond in ways that confuse or dismay you until she feels reassured. Okay, so the thing here is that most men think, okay, we're married, you know, I've courted her and I've wooed her and she knows I love her, done deal. But for a wife, it is anything but. Because, as we see, buried inside most women, even in those in great relationships, is this insecurity about whether our husbands really love us. Really love us. We think, does he still love me? Are we still okay? Does he really love me? And that insecurity comes about in a number of different times. So it comes about a lot when there is a time of conflict between the two of you, when things just aren't quite right between the two of you. Now, for men, most likely, when you are in conflict, your response is to withdraw, to go to your cave or to your shed or wherever it is that you go. You need your space. You need time to, you know, to think about it. Another time when that security is often triggered in a woman is when her emotional tank is depleted, when it's dry, when she's exhausted, when she's had a bad day at work or the kids have been driving her up the wall, something like that. Or when she's put on a few kilos and she's just not feeling good about herself. She's dry and depleted emotionally. Thirdly, or if you're away a lot, men, for whatever good reason, for work or whatever it is, and, you know, she may, you know, you may even hate being away from the home during that time or for that amount of time, but that is a challenge to her security. And all of those things say to a woman, does he still love me? Does he still love me? So here are some things that you might be able to actually think about, men, that will actually address those issues. Now, you may think, that is a crazy thing for her to think like that. She knows I love her. But you have to understand, she doesn't. Or she does in a sort of a cerebral way, but she needs to keep being reassured about that. So here are some tips. One, constantly reassure her of your love, especially during the times of conflict. You might say something like, you know, I'm a bit angry right now and I need some space, so I'm just going to go outside and think, but I want you to know that we're okay. Okay? I can tell you that's a magic bullet for women. All you've got to do is say, we're okay. It's okay. When you do need that space, reassure her that it's not about her. As I say, most men need time alone to think about the problem. Most women are exactly the opposite. We want to talk about it. See the difference? You want time alone to think about the problem, we want to talk about it. So you could say, well, honey, right now I need some time alone. I'm just a bit out of sorts and it's got nothing to do with the way I feel about you. I love you, okay. Can I just have, you know, half an hour to think and then we'll come back and we'll talk about it? If she knows that you're going to come back and talk about it, that's fantastic. That's a win-win for both of you. You get time alone to think about it and she knows that you're going to come back and talk about it. Realise too that when we women are upset, when your wives are upset, we don't need space. We need closeness. We want a hug. You know, one woman said to me, instead of just getting upset and leaving me alone to calm down, I want him to come over and give me a huge hug and just let me know that he loves me. And then he can go outside and do whatever he wants to do when he goes to his cave. But I just want to let him, I just want him to know that he loves me. She wants a hug. She doesn't want the space necessarily. And lastly, keep pursuing her long after the wedding day. All those things that you did and said that made you totally irresistible to her, that made her, you know, her heart beat, keep on doing them. Don't stop, because they're the things that will fill her emotional tank. You know, the things that, you know, sending her an email or a text through the day saying, you know, honey, I really love you, or flirting with her, or buying her flowers. I've done this to a few men's groups before. And I say, when you buy her flowers, don't buy them from the service station because we can smell the petrol on them. Buy them from the florist because that's much nicer. Making a dinner date. Let her know that you're still chasing her and not taking her for granted. That will be huge for her. So that's the first one. Second one is women are emotional. That's the surface understanding that men often have about women, but the real understanding is women deal, and that's the second column, women deal with multiple thoughts and emotions from their past and their present all at the same time, and they can't be easily dismissed. It's a bit like a computer, having lots of windows open, you know, on your computer. This is what it's like for a woman, having lots of windows open and messages come in from email and pop-ups come up and we deal with them all at the same time. And so sometimes women will appear to you to be distracted or bringing something up or mention something out of the blue that you haven't asked about or brought up, but it's because you're thinking pretty sequentially and you think about one thing at a time and move on. We've got all these things going on. So if you were to say to me, what are you thinking about right now, Leslie? So I could list off a whole host of things that are going around in my mind and that I'm needing to process even as I stand here talking to you. So it's one, you know, doing this, thinking about what I'm going to do next and how I'm going to do that. I'm also thinking about what I'm going to have for dinner tonight. I'm thinking about how my daughter is going. She's just around the city to surf this morning and how she's pulled up okay. I'm thinking about that difficult emotional thing I had with my mother last weekend and how that affects our relationship. So all those things I think about all the time. And sometimes Jim, I might say something out of the blue and Jim will go, where on earth did that come from? And it's because it's come from one of the little pop-ups in my mind that I haven't had time to process out loud, but I just bring up. And so sometimes it looks like I'm being highly emotional and over-emotional. And that's what it'll be like with you men when you're thinking about what your wives are thinking about like that. And we don't really have that close button where we can close off all those things and only deal with this one thing over here. All those things are still open and being dealt with. And you know, you hear that thing about women are multitaskers. Well, we're multi-thinkers as well. because we're dealing with all of those things at the same time. So it'll be the reason why you think your wife is preoccupied by little things. It's because they're going around in her mind. It's why she'll often bring up an emotional thing from a long way back. It's why sometimes women often say or give out the impression that they're too tired or too upset for sex at night. It's because there are lots of windows open up in here and they can't close them off in order to relax, in order to have sex. Now, there are things that you men can do about that in helping her think through all those things that are open in her brain. This book will help you do that if you want to do that. Number three, the surface understanding is women want security. In other words, they want financial security. In actual fact, the real understanding is women need emotional security and closeness with you so much that they will endure financial insecurity to get it. Okay, let me ask you a question. Let me find the right question. 52. No, that's not it. Oops. I'll pick that up in a minute. Okay. If you had to... Thank you. Just let me ask the women this question. If you had to choose between two bad choices, which would you rather endure? One, financial struggles, or two, struggles arising from insecurity or lack of closeness in your relationship with your husband. Okay? Well, let me ask you again before you put... I want you to put your hand up. Which would you rather endure out of two bad choices, financial struggles or two, struggles arising from insecurity or lack of closeness in your relationship with your husband? So who would rather endure the first one, financial struggles? Look around, men. That's most of the women here. Okay? And there will be the others will obviously answer the other one. Now, that probably comes as a huge surprise to you because, and I know this is what, it's one of the things that I have understood about men is that desire to be the provider, the protector, and I want to provide for my family. And we really appreciate that about you men. But we want you to know that we want you more than we want the money and the financial security. That is what is more important. So can you see, we would rather endure financial struggles. That seems to be the lesser of two evils than struggling because of a lack of closeness and intimacy in our relationship with you guys. So... that is a huge one, and it would be interesting to sort of talk through that. So here's a list or a couple of things. What does that emotional security look like for a woman? What does it mean for you to be, for her to be close and not to worry about the financial things? One is she feels that the two of you are close, that there is an intimacy between you, that you are friends, that you are good friends, even best friends. She's emotionally secure when she sees that you make time for her, that you make time as a priority for her. So she'll see you going out and spending time with your good mates, but that you don't make that as a priority for her. Three, that she sees your commitment to her, that no matter how bad things get, you're committed. Like Jim was saying, I'm in here for the long haul. I'm not going to leave. I'm not going to walk away when things get tough. I'm here for the long haul. That's what she wants. She loves it. She's emotionally secure when she sees that you're active in the life of the home, when you spend time with the kids and that you make that a priority. But she also loves that you she loves seeing you make an effort to provide for them. But she wants the first lot before she wants the last one, if that makes sense. Let me read out what what one woman said. One woman said, financial struggles by definition are difficult, but if I had to, I'd rather have them than lose him. Okay? I'd rather have the financial struggles than lose him. A woman who grew up in a large family in a country town where, you know, life was a bit tough. She said this about her father. When we were little, we lived in a small house right in the city. The neighbourhood wasn't great, but I loved my life, and my dad was a happy dad. When he was home from work, we'd all play. He was so much fun to be around. When I was 11, my dad wanted to provide a better future for us. And rather than just picking another house and moving out of the city, he decided to have a special big house built. Since we didn't have tons of money, he knew he'd have to do a lot of the work himself. He said we were worth it. Unfortunately, he didn't realise what all the extra stress and pressure would do. Not just to him, but to us. The stress of juggling everything began to wear my dad down. We lost happy dad and instead got grumpy dad. He stopped playing with us so much and he was just on edge a lot, not relaxed and fun. I now know he was sacrificing himself to provide a better future for us kids. And I love that about him, but we wanted him much more than we wanted the new house or the better schools. We just wanted happy dad back. That's what that one is all about. Number four, she doesn't want you to fix it. She just wants you to listen. Now, that's the surface understanding. What are we moving towards? When she's sharing an emotional problem, her feelings and her desire to be heard are much more important than the problem itself. Just listen to this scenario. You come home from work, guys, you can tell your wife's a bit upset, and she tells you she's had a difficulty with the next door neighbour. You ask her, you know, tell me what's wrong and you know, tell me what happened. And so she tells you what's happened. And you immediately say, this is what you ought to do. You ought to go over, ask her in for morning tea, lay the problem on the table, say, what are we going to do about it? Your wife reacts by going, I'm trying to tell you something and you don't care. And you go, didn't I just show that I cared by listening to you and offering you my advice about how to fix the problem? Does that sound familiar? The problem is, you were not really listening because what we women feel about a problem is more important to us than the problem itself. Okay? So when you're listening to our feelings, you're really listening to us. We want to tell you what we're feeling about the problem, we don't want you to fix the problem. The woman probably actually knows what has to be done. She probably knows that that's what she needs to do. So why is she sharing it with her husband? It's because she's sharing it because she wants to tell you so that you will understand what's bothering her. You see, I think for most men, you've trained yourself to, cut through the clutter of emotions, get them out to one side, and deal with the issue, deal with the real problem. That's what you do at work. But for us women, those feelings are the real issue. That's what the thing is for us. So here are some tips that you might be able to think about as you deal with that with your wives. When she looks like she wants to talk to you, give her your full physical attention. Okay, sit down opposite her. Don't wander from room to room as she follows behind you, trying to tell you what the problem is. Face her, look her in the eye. Don't be distracted by anything else that's happening at the same time. Don't, do the Sudoku in the paper as you're listening to her tell. Listen to her, really listen. And then actively listen for the right thing. And what is it? What is the thing that she wants you to listen for? How she feels. Then acknowledge her and affirm her using those words that she's used to you. Sweetheart, I can tell you're really upset about the little tiff you had with Jane. I can really tell that you're upset. You must be feeling terrible about that. You've just affirmed and acknowledged. You haven't told her what to do. And don't try and tell her the feeling is wrong. The feeling may be wrong, but don't try and tell her that just yet. Just listen to it. Just listen to it. And sometimes men can try to help by saying things like, don't you think you're overreacting, darling? It's not really as bad as that. Or, is that really what happened? Are you sure that she didn't say this and something like that? Or sometimes even worse, wondering aloud, is it that time of the month, And even don't try and correct her spiritually at that time. You know, you've just got to love Jane and be forgiving. You know, that may be what she has got to do, but she doesn't want to hear that right now. She wants you to understand what she's feeling. The men who listen well hold enormous power. When you listen well to your wife, that is enormous. And she will, you know, walk over hot coals for you if you listen well to her. And if you get the sequence right, that is, if you listen well, invariably, when you give advice, she'll say, that's a great idea, I'll go and do that. Because you've affirmed her and you've filled her emotional tank by listening to her first, and then you can go and do that. Number five, the surface understanding here, big one. Surface understanding is, she doesn't want much sex, therefore she doesn't want me. She doesn't find me attractive. Real understanding is, physically, women tend to crave sex less often than most men do, but it's usually not related to your desirability or to your attractiveness. One of the most helpful remarks I ever read, which helped me understand both my reaction to sex as opposed to Jim's, was this one by a comment by a woman called Amelia Clark, and she said this: men have sex in order to feel good. Women need to feel good in order to have sex. Okay? If you understand that, that will be enormous in your sexual understanding of each other. Men need have sex in order to feel good. Women need to feel good in order to have sex. So on the basis of that, it means men are pretty much ready for sex any time, because the more often the better. I always want to feel good. So therefore, you know, sex is really, you know, important all the time. What was that? How easy, that's right. I was at a seminar the other day and the woman out the front says, we're going to think about what men need. And so she asked, you know, tell me what men need. First hand, sex. Someone over here said, more sex. And it was quite sort of funny. It was, you know, we understand that. But men, when you think about the life that a woman leads, your wife leads, you know, maybe it's, you know, holding down a job, family responsibilities. If she's looking after small kids at home, she's with these little ones all day long. She's got swinging hormonal cycles. Age is taking its toll on her body. She's tired. It's a wonder she ever feels like having sex at all. So you've got these two things, you know, like this, and you're going, my goodness, how do we bring the two together? So, four things that I think it's helpful for men to know. One, we women have a lower urge to pursue sex than you. And because you have got testosterone in hordes, in spades, and we don't have any testosterone. So it's really a physical thing. It doesn't mean that we women don't want sex or enjoy it once it's happening. We do. But seeking it is not the most uppermost thing in our minds. Secondly, women need more warm-up time than what men do. We just can't switch on like you do. So men, you need to recognise that you need to take it slow with your wife, and women, you need to understand why it is that men can be switched on fairly quickly and don't need the warm-up time that you do. So we're talking about two different beasts here, and together you have to work together in this. Third thing is, she's not turned on by sight like you are. For her, sex starts in the heart. It's how she feels emotionally about you. That's what turns her sex switches to on. So remember, she needs to feel good in order to have sex. So emotionally caring for her will switch her sex switches on. Fourthly, her lower sex drive has nothing to do with you. It's just the way she's wired. She would change it if she could. So one of the groups that this couple worked with asked this question of women. If you could magically change your sex drive, and or some of the reasons you don't want sex as much as your husband does, would you? And this was answered by women who all said they wanted less sex than their husbands. So when they asked that question, would you change if you could? 82% said yes. 18% said no. So men, women would love to have the same sex drive as you. They just don't. They're just not wired that way. So some tips. Pay attention to her. All those things that we talked about her before, reassuring her that you love her, really listening to her, all those things will make her feel good about you and will therefore increase that likelihood. Chase her. Don't give the impression that you are interested in sex the minute you walk through the bedroom door. Help her to see that you're interested in her as a person. Jim has a little quote which he may use later, which is foreplay begins at breakfast, which means that you spend the whole day romancing her and pursuing her, sending her an email, an SMS, whatever, sending her a little text saying, looking forward to seeing you tonight, offering to clear the table while she takes a bubble bath, putting the kids to bed, rather than just going sitting and watching the TV and then saying, right, let's go. And the last one, helping around the house. One woman said, there's nothing more sexy than watching my husband clean the toilet. There's actually some research which says that men who do housework get more sex than men who don't. So it's actually, if you help around the house and do the housework, help with the housework, it will actually be helpful for you. And the last one is the surface understanding. She wants to look attractive. Why does my wife want to spend all this time on buying clothes and spending, you know, half an hour in front of the mirror? And why does she keep asking me, you know, does my bottom look big in this? You know, why does she do that? Is it just a preoccupation with, you know, image and stuff like that? No. Inside your smart, secure wife lives a little girl who deeply needs to know that you find her beautiful and that you only have eyes for her. And he makes that, Jeff Feldhahn makes this that comment on the basis of his daughter, his little daughter, who, you know, loves getting dressed up in her ballerina tutu and twirling around and saying, Daddy, do you think I look beautiful in this? And he says, Jeff Feldhahn says that he thinks that inside every woman lives a little girl who loves twirling around and saying, do you think I look beautiful in this? Because they want their husbands to say, yes, you look beautiful in that. She wants you to know. So she wants to know that you only have eyes for her. And that she knows, yes, you will be attracted by other beautiful women, but that you only come back to her. You're the one that she has eyes for. There's that lovely ad on TV at the moment. I have no idea what it's advertising, but it's a really old couple. You know, they look like they're in about their 80s or something, rather. You know the one I mean. And, you know, it's something about loyalty. I think it must be for an insurance company or something or other. But, you know, they're sitting there and, you know, they've been married for 50 years and they, you know, I just love my wife. And she says, and you know what? He thinks I'm beautiful. I think he needs to get his eyes checked. And they both roar laughing, you know. But that's exactly what she loves about him and what he does. He thinks she's beautiful. She's old and wrinkled and you know, nearly, you know, grey and all that sort of stuff. But for her, you know, that's so important that he thinks she's still beautiful. And I think that's what this is here. Okay, I'm done. Are there any questions about any of that? Or will we just go and have some afternoon tea? Okay, all right, yes, that's fine. Go and have morning, we'll have some afternoon tea, and then if you want to ask questions after that, that's good.
It says, anything eaten on church property is automatically good for you. So. No, it's my favourite slogan. So. There's a whole lot more that we could do, and just as this is going around, and this is the one for women only, again, just taking some of the headings out of that those two books that we're recommending to you. Before I turn to the sheet, let me make a general observation that goes to what Leslie was saying and what I'm about to say. which actually is a kind of a mutual obligation to of each of the spouses in a marriage relationship. That is to say, one of the chief things we have to do in terms of a responsibility is to work out how we actually understand the other person. Leslie and I actually don't make many jokes about marriage or that kind of stuff at all. Not because we don't like humour, I think we do. But because we're really on sacred ground, and because most people, whether they like it or not, gain their understanding of sexual relationship, identity, purpose, function, all that kind of stuff, from friends or Pack to the Rafters, or those, that, whether we like it or not, actually colours our understanding. And each time we might see an episode like that, say, no, that's not right, that's not right, that's not right. Nevertheless, there is a kind of a distilling drip down effect. Or when I'm catching the train from Gosford through to the city sometimes, especially the early morning ones or late afternoons, and see, you know, the young women devouring Dolly and Cleo and those sorts of things, that it does inform them. We are very conservative people in this building right now. We might think we're on the cutting edge. We ain't. You know, we are very trad, you know, conservative folk. Very few of us will be involved in huge debates in our offices about the techniques surrounding oral sex. But the non-Christians will be, and the guys at the pub are, and some of the women after they've had a couple of wines at a local wine bar or dinner party will be as well. I'm glad we are like we are, because we're trying to honour God and be other person-centred. But it's hard for us, and it's going to be increasingly harder for our children. So our children will see how we are modelling and representing, albeit awkwardly, proper sexual identity and the proper way to resolve issues and the proper way to argue and the proper way to even approach sexuality. You know, the old joke, isn't it? Once kids get a bit older, the idea that their mum and dad have sex together is almost, oh, it's like dragging your fingers down the, you know, the glass sheet. I don't want to go there, as kids will say. But for us, we've got to be aware of each other's needs and longings in that sort of relationship. Leslie's touched on a little bit from the point of view of what women wish men knew about women. We are hoping to actually address both those issues, but from a biblical point of view. Ministers talk, and Bible teachers speak of exegeting the Bible. There's a sense in which we're exegeting our spouse, coming to understand and unpack. So we don't make jokes about, oh, you know, I don't understand my marriage partner. You know, if I ask them something, well, there's an issue in life, and I say, what's wrong? And my marriage partner says to me, well, if you don't know, I'm not going to tell you. No, that's not good enough. It's a question of understanding and working at it. There are two sides to this piece of paper. I think you should have one that side looks like that and one that hasn't got a heading. But again, it's by that Shanti Feldhahn for Women Only. Again, looking at the surface understanding of what this means in practice. If I can now speak to the women, and the guys obviously going to listen in. But women, in a word, in a small sentence, men need respect. Somebody might say, well, these six or seven things you've got listed down here, men are insecure, men are, you know, so on. What do we say to the men, guys, just suck it up? You know? Just get over it. You know? This is life. And in a part, you might actually say, yeah. But let me tell you, I've talked to a lot of men who, in the quietness, when things have gone really bad, this is exactly the sort of stuff that I'm talking about. And when I've done some marriage counselling, especially when we're pastoring in a church, I'd have a piece of paper, a small card, two or three cards actually, and I have a different sentence written on one side of each card. And I'm sitting talking to a couple, and I'd slide the card over the table and say, when you turn it over, tell me who's more likely to say this, a man or a woman. And they turn it over, and a woman might say, oh, that's what a woman would say. Or, oh, that's what a bloke would say. You know what's written on the card? You already know. Leslie's told you in part. On one side might be a phrase that goes, I don't feel loved anymore. And so that's what a woman would say. Yeah, men want, we want to be loved. But that's in a heterosexual relationship, that seems to come to the fore. It's that security thing. Or another statement might read, I don't seem to count much around my house anymore. So that's what a guy would say. I don't get any respect. And I've known of guys to actually pull back, play no speaks, because I just feel like they're being controlled or ordered or disrespected. Hey, you might say, okay, guys, suck it up. And you get that sort of situation in a marriage where the woman has needs, the man has needs, and each one is working out a way to manipulate the other to provide for that need. Anyone here got a pet dog?
Yeah.
It's okay. Not pet cats. Don't like cats. They're kind of sociopaths. But you get a tick on a dog. The dog does everything for the tick. Tick does nothing for the dog. And you get those marriages where it's like two ticks and no dog. Each one trying to get from the other. The woman trying to get from the husband that sense of being loved. The man trying to get from the wife that sense of respect. And you work out ways to say or do or not say or not do to try and deliver. That's what's going on here. Men need respect. But what that means in practice is men would rather feel unloved than inadequate and disrespected. Now again, I could read you through the focus groups and the surveys that they came out, but the figures go around about 75%. And higher. It's not like an algebraic or mathematical theorem that 100 times out of 100 every time it'll be like that. But they are major, major trends. I've had men say to me, that's why I work back a bit, because as soon as I walk in the door I'm going to be told what to do, and any opinion I've got is not worth having. You say, don't be a child. Yeah, that's true. But women, there's a sense in which men respond to that in the proper way. Men are insecure. Despite their in-control exterior, men often feel like imposters and are insecure that their insecurities will be insecure about their insecurities being discovered. People often make jokes about the husband asking directions when you're driving their car. It's interesting that it's not so much the pride issue, is that men are kind of wired, generally speaking, to want to try and figure things out. They are. I wonder how you do that. A new car, even in modern new cars, more often the discussion might be, I wonder how they get the much power out of it. Oh, that's interesting. How do they fix that? I know that's true because, see, long times before I was a minister, I used to work for David Jones. I was their only hi-fi and radio mechanic. So if Russell and his wife bought a brand new hi-fi from DJs and they brought it home and the thing was occupying half the lounge room and making great sound, and after a little while something went wrong and smoke came out the back, I was the guy, went out from DJs, got in the lounge room, put the smoke back in. It was just like that. But often when I'd go into a place, guess who'd walk into the room when I'm fixing the thing and they'd say, oh, I think it's a valve. Wasn't the wife, always the husband. And sometimes I got so jacked at that happening, I'd say, which one did you think it was? Oh, mate, I'll let you do it. I'll let you do it. And he'd back out the room. Okay? You ask any tradesman who often it is. Now, it's not always the case, but there's that kind of trend. Men are insecure, and they, but on the other hand, they want to appear to be in control and kind of know what they're doing. So if you're a wife and you want to make your husband feel more insecure, you may want to bag his sexual performance. You may want to criticize the fact that he's not getting a promotion. There's a whole raft of things that you can do to get back at him because he didn't make you feel as secure and as loved as you would like to feel. Now, the women here, don't tell me out loud. But what nail do you reckon you could drive into your husband's security coffin? That's got the smell of sulfur all over it. That's sinful. But how can I? He lets me down so much. And that goes to the issues that both Leslie and I are raising here, because I have been hurt by my, and I feel that I ought to be, and it starts to be about me rather than being other person-centered. Surface understanding, men are providers. Even if you, the wife, personally made enough income to support the family's lifestyle, it would make no difference to the mental burden he feels to need to provide. That's not always the case. In fact, these days on television, radio or journal articles, they always go straight to the, you know, to the switched roles. You know, people say, oh, well, the wife is now running the law practice and solving international disputes, but the man, he's at home, you know, changing the nappies and, you know, the stay-at-home dad. I'm not speaking out against that. What I'm saying is that there is, in the general sense, there is that need for the man to provide, to actually say, I'm providing this secure environment. I'm in charge of the home. That's what the guy, Leslie and I both know a man who is not working and is at home most of the time, and his wife is working, and he's at a kind of a loose end. He's just not sure what he's on about. And I think if I was to pull him forward and say, using his first name, what's the engine that drives your ship? What do you see as your role and responsibility? I think he'd struggle with it. Because he's kind of to suppress this need to provide. That's why when retrenchments happen, more often than not, emotionally and psychologically it hits men harder than it hits women, even though the financial drawback might be the same. On the surface, men want more sex. Leslie's spoken about this a bit. But what it means in practice is your sexual desire for your husband profoundly affects his sense of well-being and confidence in all areas of his life. Because sex unlocks a man's emotions, in a sense. And you know who holds the key. See, women, what do you think is a Christian approach to sex? And putting aside the jokes and the nonsense and stuff, all the women here, what do you think, if you had to give a talk to young women who are about to get married, biblically, how would you approach the issue of sex? Would you say, well, the Bible says we've got to have children. And it does. Genesis says that. If a couple, completely healthy, stable, in every respect, keen Christian couple, just want to get married and live in a house down the road, but they say, but we're not going to have kids. I'd be having long conversations with them, theologically and doctrinally, about their understanding of the role of marriage and the place of marriage. So if we want three kids, is that three lots of sex in a marriage? I think the Hare Krishnas had that view. Probably accounts for not many Hare Krishnas around, actually. Quite possible. Lie back and think of England. That was the British advice, wasn't it? Okay. These comments are very helpful, aren't they? The way we approach it, and that statement by Amelia Clark in that book, I think from Matthias Media, isn't it? Yeah. That men have sex to feel good and women need to feel good in order to have sex. There's a lot about that. And the woman who has a different kind of response mechanism, emotionally and physiologically, both man needs to understand the woman's role, responsibility, and the woman needs to understand their husband's role and his needs. And a man might say to his wife, "Sweetheart, this has been a terribly bad day, and you know it's been a bad week, in fact, a bad month. And I know you don't want to have sex right now. Let's keep going for a little while. Let me know when you think that might be okay. And if it goes on for months, then you need to talk with more people." But I've dealt pastorally with lots of folk like that, from very, very serious situations where a wife, after having given birth to a second child, started to recall elements of child abuse and shut down the emotional response to have sex for about 12 months. To another woman who, similar thing, the woman who was had physical ailment, couldn't allow it, and that husband was very faithful to her. See, because when a man says in his marriage vows, in sickness and in health, that's not just common cold or a broken toe. That also could be some area of issue that stopped physical sex. And if the wife doesn't hide behind that and says, "I'll play that card all the time," which itself is selfish. But if the wife understands, "Hey, I can trust my husband. I can trust him not to try anything on." For example, that man who said to me, told me about his wife and after the birth of the second child and so on. He said, "What do I do, Jim?" He said, "I want to have sex with my wife. I love her. And it's good when we're together like that." I said, "When you go to bed at night, before..." I said, "Tonight when you go to bed," I said, "you say to her, 'Sweetie, I don't fully understand this, but I want you to know that I'm good for the money. I won't even put my hand on your back or touch you on the arm until you give me permission to say it's okay to hug again.'" And when he told her that, that told her that he was committed to her. He was committed to making her feel secure and letting her know that he wasn't going to be demanding or controlling or petulant or pout, but that he was really concerned for her. He was other person-centered. And after a number of months, things came around. They've now got 4 kids, so obviously it's working. That's what it means. That's not all about me and the fact that if I don't have sex, I kind of spontaneously combust or explode. Or the woman who says, "This hurts me now, physically, because I've just gone through change of life and my body is drier." Husband has to understand that. Has to. And they need to be able to talk about it. Is there an area, women, in your life that you feel like you can't talk to your husband about it because you think he might be too demanding or he might want to control you? Maybe your husband wants to do some things sexually that you don't feel comfortable about. How comfortable are you able to be able to say to him? See, at this point, what is really required is that both husband and wife need to say, "Hey, listen, that was some interesting stuff got, the dead cat got put on the table." I hate cats. But the dead cat got put on the table at the marriage course. "How about we go for a long walk and just talk about this? Or how about we get some babysitters in? And not go to a movie, which is really, really dumb. You sit in a building for 3 hours in the dark and you can't talk, and then you go home and resume normal programming. Now, let's get some babysitters in, and we'll go for a long walk. Have a couple of cups of coffee. And what we'll say is, let's just put anything there, just to say, 'How do you feel about this? How do you feel about that?'" And you'll see that tentative little movement as one says something and wonders what's going to happen. Will the other partner say, "I never knew you thought that way. Well, that's not right. Or how could you think such a thing? Or yeah, you're always complaining." We're on sacred ground here. But, because I'm talking to the women now, and if I can just sort of step aside, men, it's your responsibility to lead and to initiate that kind of conversation. That's what male headship is. I want to provide an area of security and stability for my wife so she can actually feel comfortable talking about this sort of stuff. No demandingness, no control. The questions like, how do you feel about that? How do you think I've let you down over the last 12, this is husband to wife. Sweetie, how do you think I've let you down over the last 4 weeks? You haven't let me down. Yeah. How can I lift my game, do you reckon? Now, that's not giving you a blank check. You say, well, first of all, I want you to paint the house, you know, you know, get back into shape again, where's the six-pack I married, all that kind of stuff. You say, well, it's at the back now, but, you know. But it's that kind of personal openness. Sex changes everything. And as a wife, you will understand that that is important to your husband. And you might say, well, I don't particularly feel like having sex with him at this juncture, tonight, outside, in the dark, with the lights off, on whatever little thing, and say, but in order to minister to him, yeah, I'll do that, and I'll love him. If he becomes very demanding, I'll have to be able to say, sweetheart, I don't feel like that right now. I love you dearly. How about we work on this for tomorrow night or the weekend? And a Christian husband may be disappointed, but they'll say, that's okay, I love you. And indeed, there are many people, for a whole host of reasons, who can't have sex immediately anyway. I can tell you a half dozen occupations that are like that. In the church I used to be in at Liverpool, there were lots and lots of marriages. I did hundreds and hundreds of weddings. And one young guy I was talking to on one occasion said, I said, you're looking forward to marriage? Oh, yeah, Jim, it's going to be great. I said, why is he? I'm going to have sex all the time. And you're like, I said, oh, I have a fact. Yeah, every day. Yeah, yeah, great. I said, you ever heard of menopause? Ever heard of menstruation? Wasn't very clear on that kind of stuff. So we started to do, as you say, we did the math. I think we got down to about one day and two throughout the entire year. As the Bible says, his countenance fell. But that's what men are like, and a wife will understand that and minister to that as he ministers her. The keeper of the visual filing cabinet, or the visual Rolodex if you like, why it's so natural for him to look and so hard to forget what he's seen. This is really hard for women to grasp, but men are visually stimulated. Men have erections, women don't. Men are visually stimulated. And it's like a tape. You see someone who's really attractive and you can't kind of... In the surveys there, it was really quite fascinating. There was a particular statement made... I haven't got time now, but one of the quotes in that book is that how men, Christian men, say that if a lecture's been given or something's happening and a very attractive... a younger woman walks in the room, they notice her. Emotionally, they're kind of, oh, she's there. In fact, there was a fascinating documentary on the ABC a couple of weeks ago about, you may have seen, about young men who are on a skateboard. This university was trying to, they told these young men that they were doing a survey on their capacity to withstand pain, which I understand is part and parcel of skateboarding. And so this very ordinary guy in a white coat stood there with his clipboard taking notes, and these guys are doing their tricks and whatever you call them, you know, going over walls and all sort of business. Then they said, oh, there's another person going to do some... this other assistant's going to do some other surveys. The other assistant happened to be this drop-dead gorgeous blonde, you know, who deliberately undid her hair at the beginning of the survey and it flowed back out and all the rest of it. Guess how the guys behave? We're not talking about 13-year-old, you know, prepubescent. We're talking about 25, 30-year-old professional skateboarders. Wow, did they turn it on? Then they were told at the end why the, you know, what the survey was really all about. And they, and oh, shucks, you know, this sort of stuff. One foot on top of the other. That's how we are. And if you do walk into a shopping centre and there's a very attractive, your husband will notice. It's not because he doesn't love you. It's not because he wants to get into bed with her. It's just the way men are wired. And that makes it harder for men. And that is why when you go down, in some sense, to second last one, the truth about the way you look. I think that one there. Men are about appearance. You don't need to be a size 3, but your man does need to see you making the effort to take care of yourself. And he will take on significant cost or inconvenience to support you. See, that's a major issue for 21st century first world people, isn't it, really? Body image. It's all the go. It's not about being size 3 or some sort of, you know, anorexic kind of sad person. But what it means is am I healthy? Comfortable about who I am and what shape I am. So a woman goes to work and she's really dressed really well to go to work, but comes home and just slobs around for the husband. That makes it harder for him because he loves you and he wants to notice you. That's why that statement there, why what's on the outside matters to him on the inside. There's a survey here. I'll give you this survey. It's on page 161. It goes this. Imagine your wife or significant other is overweight, wears baggy sweats when you are at home, only does her hair and makeup to go out. She hates being overweight, but nothing much changes, and lately you've seen her eating more sweets. What goes through your mind? Men's response. Doesn't bother me at all. 12%. It emotionally bothers me. 70%. I want her to make an effort to take care of herself, not just for herself, but also for me. 47%. This question doesn't apply to me because my wife already looks great and I can't imagine her otherwise. 20%. Now, some people answered more than one time, but that 70%, it emotionally bothers me. It's not as if the man is saying, I want someone who looks like, you know, some silly person who's all show and no go. But the person actually cares about themselves physically. It's why, even though I take heart medication and I've got a stent, a whole bunch of other things, but partly because my father had a very bad history of heart and other things, and I was a chronic asthmatic as a child, losing months of school, that when I was married and we started to have kids, I deliberately tried to keep myself really, really well. Used to go jogging and eating and trying to eat the right sort of stuff. Why? Because I'm 67, I'm almost 68 years of age. I could fall off the perch right now. I mean, it's quite possible. But I'll be able to minister to Leslie if I am healthy. I'll be able to support my children, my grandchildren, if I am healthy. And I want to die well, because the last thing I'm going to teach my children is how to die. Think about that. Just let myself go, give up on life. What does that say by way of being Christian? So pray for me that I might die well, and that I might be able to minister, even if God gives me another 10 years, 77 years of age, 87, who knows? So, and women, same deal. You know, we're not going to be the same shape. Good grief. Who is? I mean, you can't Photoshop reality. Okay? But women, your husband knows if you take care for him sensibly. Last one. Words for your heart. What your man most wishes you knew about him. There was a survey at the end of this book. Huge survey, this one. And they asked what it was. They asked hundreds and hundreds of men And they said, of all the things that you hope and wish that your wife knew about you, what is it? And the answer was, the men were hoping and wishing that their wives knew how much they loved them. Interesting. It's true. Okay? 5:2. I've pruned that down a bit. Any questions? What is, yes, I remember that. I remember what I was going to say. Yeah. Yeah. That they've in a sense, they've ceased, they've throttled back on what I call being other person-centered. See, in extreme sense, the man who smokes, the woman who drinks alcohol. I'm not talking about one cigarette a year and a glass of wine at a wedding, but the person who is whose health is being affected by it. They might say, well, it's my body, I can do what I like. Not really. First of all, it's God's body, and you're under him for that. And secondly, you can be more assistance to the general body of Christ and to the family of whom you are a part of, in whose network you operate. You'll be able to minister to them more ably if you are healthy. It's not slim, it's not, big, whatever it is, it's healthy. And so there's a, I've often said to a number of men, they like to put the drink away. I said, mate, in my case, as Leslie knows, our youngest son got his asthma from me. He was really bad, hospitalised, 17, 18 times, really bad scene. I never drank at all. So all the time he was at home, never drank a drop of alcohol, because I didn't want that to be the night when he was crook, I had to get him to hospital and I couldn't drive. Because I've actually been in court supporting men who've been done for DUI, and they've said to the judge, oh, I had to get my friend to the hospital, and the judge said, no, if you want to get your friend to the hospital, use your Visa card and get a taxi. And they were done. So I thought, I'm a father, I've got to be responsible. At any point in life, my kids might need me. I don't want them to say, my dad was more concerned about his own enjoyment and his own life, and he wasn't there when I needed him. That's pretty heavy, but that's how I think. I think that's other person-centered. I'm committed to the welfare of those four kids. And I want them to be able to say, my dad is for me. He leads his family and makes us secure. I better go.
Jim and Leslie, people will be coming in and meeting you.